Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. Yes, it's the fastest streaming podcast, the fastest streaming podcast in the history of such things, depending on local download speeds and your internet service provider. I am your host, Doug McBurney. This is the Weekly Worldview. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And everybody's here in studio, including my extremely audio engineer, as we prepare to tell you what's going on. Yes, yes, we need to stop and figure out what's going on, and that's why we are here. Now, I spent the week, last week, in Chicago, and had the opportunity to stand in one of O'Hare Airport's legendary security lines. Yeah, it was tumultuous indeed, because I had heard you needed to get to O'Hare 3 hours early, and I had seen the videos of the lines, the security lines. You have seen these, right? You've seen these pictures, these videos? Horrifying. So I'm at the rental car lot, returning my rental car, and it's 2 hours before my flight is scheduled to depart O'Hare. So I called the home office. I said, we better make some other arrangements. I probably won't get to O'Hare until about an hour and a half before flight time, and I'm certain not to make it through the security lines. But little did I know that American Airlines could be depended on. That's right. They had their standard hour and 15-minute delay. And so I was able to make my flight, and everything ended happily. Actually, I got in the line. The line at O'Hare was about 45 minutes, which apparently is a record these days for speed. 45 minutes, yes. That's the new normal, America. The new normal in your airport security line is 45 minutes. Just get used to it. But when I got to the front of the line, I have to admit they had five screeners, or what do they call the people who take your driver's license and your boarding pass and then scribble on it, doodle on it? I'm not sure what those people are called, but they had five of them, and they were working very hard. I said, I actually appreciate you working this hard. You guys are definitely working it. Thank you. Got through the line. I got on my flight and got home. Not a bad week in Chicago. I've got to give Chicago. We often, on this broadcast, talk a lot about the darker side of Chicago. What with the murder rate of 10 to 12 every weekend. So you often hear the bad side of Chicago here on the podcast here. But, you know, Chicago is a lot like San Francisco as far as the food goes. You can pretty much stumble into any greasy spoon in Chicago and get an outstanding meal. I've got to say, I think I had the best pastrami I've ever had in my life. And then a roast beef, well, an Italian beef sandwich that they actually dip in the gravy before they put it on your plate. That was something else. Anyway, it's not like Denver, where you have to go to a chain restaurant from Texas in order to get a decent meal. Chicago, actually, they know how to cook there. So anyway, we had a nice time in Chicago. But I did discover, while I was in Chicago, I discovered reason number 667 to get or keep your kids out of a youth group. Yes, keep your kids out of the youth group, especially at evangelical community churches. Yes, the other 666 reasons have been well spoken upon at Denver Bible Church. You can feel free to come out and visit, and you'll hear the 666 reasons to get or keep your kids out of the youth group. But reason number 667... your child could be influenced by a millennial youth group leader. Yes. So I had dinner with a business associate, and some of his friends, because it was a church men's group, small group, and got together for dinner, and we're sitting around eating dinner, and we begin to discuss politics, as you can well imagine. Everybody wonders if everybody else is supporting Donald Trump. And I believe, let's see, there were one, two, three. There were three members of an evil community church, one being the millennial youth group leader. Well, the first two, they are Trump supporters. I said, I cannot support Trump, and I told them why. And the millennial youth group leader said that he was leaning toward the Democrats. Leaning toward the Democrats, plural, said this 20-something youth group leader. Now, when a millennial says, I'm leaning toward the Democrats, plural, that means he's leaning toward Bernie Sanders. That's how that can be interpreted accurately every time. And, the two fellas with me, they're members of this kid's church. And they were a bit surprised. And they went on and on about how Bernie is a socialist, and socialism always ends up in the slaughter and bloodshed and disaster, economic poverty. Well, we'll get to some of that. I don't know if my millennial friend is tuning in, but I'll get to an example, I believe, in the show as we go forward of, just some of the terrestrial reasons why socialism is bad. Terrestrial is not the word I was looking for. Some of the worldly reasons. The economic poverty, right? The loss of opportunity. The enslavement of people and the theft of their goods. So forget the spiritual reasons that socialism is set up in direct defiance of the living God, who said that men should be free to do with their money as they please. Forget about all that. Let's just talk about the carnal reasons, the worldly reasons, the earthly reasons. And they gave him a long spiel on that. And one of the gentlemen did assert why this young man, this young millennial who's leaning toward the Democrats, why he should support Donald Trump. Jobs, the border, national security, and jobs, I think. And I said, you know, that's all well and good, but those are all just appeals to the flesh. You know, am I scared of losing my job? Am I scared of losing my money? Am I scared of someone breaking into my house and hurting me and stealing from me? Am I scared of a foreign invader? These are all appeals to the flesh. And if Donald Trump, I said to him, I said, if Donald Trump was an atheist or an agnostic, and had never indicated that he was some sort of Christian, and he was still willing to uphold justice, rebuild our infrastructure, and help keep our military strong, I could support Donald Trump. I'm not saying he has to be a Christian. Certainly not. But he has asserted he's a Christian. I think he asserted that he was a Christian right after his 2 Corinthians line. And then right before, he said that he had never asked God for forgiveness. That was, yeah. And I said, you know, the fact is Donald Trump is a godless, abortionist, homosexualist, and you're willing to vote for him for your own fleshly purposes. That's what it's all about. Anyway, he said I'd given him something to think about. And so there, that was my whirlwind tour of Chicago. But anyway, don't let your kid get in the youth group at the evangelical community church, because he'll end up out on a sign, out on the street with a Bernie Sanders sign. Anyway, one encouraging thing about this young millennial 20-something youth group leader, he is engaged to be married to a woman. That's novel in the millennial community, I think, to marry a girl. He's a boy, by the way, just so you know. That's... But let's get to it here. Going back to last week's broadcast, I have a little bit of housekeeping to do because I could not remember the name of the hapless, moronic pastor who wrote the article laying out the case for evangelical support for Trump and basically saying that any Christian who did not vote for Donald Trump was in effect voting for Hillary Clinton. You're in effect voting for the enemy. I got an email clarified because I couldn't remember the guy's name. That was it. Couldn't remember his name. So Cowboy Bob Sorensen was on the case. You remember Cowboy Bob, yes, of Question Evolution Day fame and the Question Evolution Project. He said, Doug, Pastor Carl Gallups. Carl is the fella's name. The fellow you reported on, who was making the case for evangelicals supporting Trump. Doug, he has written a few books and has been doing his preparedness thing on Huckster Jim Baker's show. Jim Baker is selling supplies, including food, for the end times apocalypse. Yes, Jim Baker selling end times foodstuffs. Did you know that? He can outfit your entire bunker. Jim and Tammy Faye Baker. He does the food. She does the makeup for the end of times bunker. Apparently, her makeup has a 20-year shelf life, and so does Mr. Baker's meatloaf that he is selling. Apparently on his, I've got to say, Cowboy Bob, haven't seen Jim Baker's show in quite some time, but I'm glad you clued us in just in case we want some meatloaf, lasagna, and eyeshadow for the apocalypse. We'll go right to Jim Baker's. I can't remember the name of his show. Was he the PTL guy? I just don't recall. They all blend together into one swirling, dizzying mass of hucksterism. All of the televangelists. Hard to tell them apart. Cowboy Bob goes on. Doug, Pastor Chris Roseborough of Fighting for the Faith had a video clip of a chef preparing that food that Mr. Baker has been selling. And the chef preparing the food said essentially that it was crap. Anyway, Doug, Carl Gallups being on that show, Jim Baker's show, made my respect for him plummet. Well, I'm sorry to hear that, Cowboy Bob, but our respect for you has been elevated because you helped us remember this hapless moron's name. So at the end of today's show, I think I will send Cowboy Bob an email, and I'm going to send him Carl Gallup's email address because I've been banned from Carl Gallup's inbox because I'm a Pharisee. For pointing out that Carl Gallups is endorsing a lying heathen, waving a Bible, claiming he's going to make America great again. Why jobs, the border, and my personal security? That's what I'm concerned about. Remind me, he said to his extremely attractive audio engineer, remind me to send Cowboy Bob Carl's email address so that Cowboy Bob can send Pastor Gallup's links to this week's show and last week's show in the hopes that Mr. Gallup's will wake up and stop being a hapless moron misleading evangelicals who are already pretty gullible, for crying out loud. Mr. Gallup's, you have a special responsibility because you know how gullible these evangelicals are. So you should not lead them into destruction or into a difficulty by encouraging them to support the likes of Donald Trump. Now, moving on from Mr. Trump, we'll go to Barry Ho, who spent the week in Hiroshima in Japan, where he went on a visit to Hiroshima, says the LA Times, and he gave a sweeping address. A sweeping address. Does Barry give any other kind of address except a sweeping address with the reverb on his voice? That's all he gives is sweeping addresses. The LA Times reports that Mr. Obama's address reflected on the obligations of humankind. Yes, yes. Barack Obama, an arbiter in his own mind of the obligations of humankind. Barry was quoted as saying in the speech, quote, technological progress without an equivalent progress in human institutions can doom us. The scientific revolution that led to the splitting of the atom requires a moral revolution as well. That is why we came to this place. Mr. Obama said it. What bothered me? Ah, yes, Mr. Obama called for a moral revolution. You know, Barry likes revolutions. And in my opinion, he is instituting a moral revolution right now. I would deem it an immoral revolution, but it is a revolution as it relates to morals. What with the whole bathrooms and the trannies and the queers and all of that, that Barry Obama seems to bend over backwards to force down the throats of normal Americans. We have, said Mr. Obama, we have a shared responsibility to look directly into the eye of history and ask what we must do differently to curb such suffering again. Now, that may not qualify as an apology outright, but he is basically implying that we, America, we have to look directly into the eye of history and try to figure out a way so that we never do anything so horrible again to so many people. It sickens me. It sickens me that this man goes to a place like this and says such things and is allowed to continue in his office. It's shocking to me. But this is where we are. Now he wants to pursue a world without nuclear weapons and yada, yada, yada. Get out of here. Is this guy almost done? This is really getting tiresome. Really getting tiresome. Now, I have been to Japan myself, and I have spent time amongst the Japanese people, and I never felt the obligation to apologize for the atomic bomb, because as you look around, if you walk around with the normal people of Japan, and you see all of them, all the millions and millions and millions and millions of them, you realize confidently that without the atomic bomb at Hiroshima and Nagasaki, many, many, many millions of those Japanese would have never existed and would have never been born because of the millions and millions of their grandparents who would have been slaughtered in the invasion of mainland Japan. And so I don't apologize to anyone in Japan for the atomic bomb. I just say thank you to Harry S. Truman. I actually saw a video of these guys a few months ago. Have you seen this? What happened to Van Halen? Yes! It's Van Halen, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, boys. Thank you very much. Exit stage left. Have you seen what's happened? There's a plastic surgeon in Los Angeles who should lose his license for what he did to Eddie Van Halen's face. Wow. Man, that is really bad work. Woo! And David Lee Roth, I mean, that remember he used to do the karate chops and the acrobatics on stage? The guy needs a walker. I mean, he's stumbling around stage. It's just really sad to see. And whoever said rock and roll will never die, well, it needs a it needs a cane. At least. It's really sad to see all that. Really embarrassing. Anyway, let's move on, though, because we do have some news from Donald Trump. Donald Trump has admitted there is something he does not know, and that is rare. Last week, apparently, he went on Jimmy Kimmel Live. If you're looking for signposts along the road to the end of Western civilization, it is the presumptive presidential nominee appearing on Jimmy Kimmel Live. Surely the end is near. But he did it. He went on Jimmy Kimmel Live Jimmy Kimmel, by the way, it was a comedian in the 1990s who my pastor looked him right in the face and said, "You are nothing but a crotch humorist. All you're able to do is make fun of bodily functions and fluids and excretions. You're a crotch humorist." Boy, Kimmel didn't like that, because he realized that his entire life, that it was summed up in that statement. Crotch humorist. Now one of the most watched personalities on late night television. Again, another signpost, ladies and gentlemen, along the road to the end of Western civilization. Jimmy Kimmel gets ratings. That says something right there. So let's see. Trump goes on Jimmy Kimmel. Kimmel, of course, brings up the transgendered issue. Might I remind you people that the transgendered issue was an issue that was not brought up ever until, I think, about 3 years ago. And now it's brought up every day, all day, on every show, everywhere, every time. It's everywhere. I've just noticed that, okay? This is something we used to not talk about, because it was one of those gross and kind of embarrassing things that maybe you knew someone in your family or a friend of a friend who was one of those, and it was just uncomfortable. It wasn't something we wanted to discuss, and we certainly did not celebrate it as the new human rights front line in the battle for human dignity. It was a subject best left in the halls of the psychotherapists and the mental institutions. But here we are, the presumptive nominee on Jimmy Kimmel Live, of all places, being asked if transgendered youth should be allowed to use any bathroom they like. Surely the end is near. Anyway, Donald Trump said he does not know yet what states should do regarding which bathroom transgendered people should use. So Trump admits he doesn't know something. That's noteworthy. And then do you see how he slipped that in? He's not sure what the states should do. After that, let's see, Breitbart reports that Donald Trump said he believes the decision should be a state issue, effectively sidestepping, answering the question, and leaving all the gullible, moronic evangelicals to say, "I think I can support Trump. Yes, he's one of us. He's for states' rights. I'm for states' rights. I think that's good." Because they're idiots. Any man who doesn't know what bathroom people should use is not qualified to be the president. He's not even qualified to be a grip on the Jimmy Kimmel show. You don't know which bathroom people should use, for crying out. Let's see. Trump answered with his wisdom. He said, "Well, the party generally believes that whatever you're born, that's the bathroom you use." Eloquently, he said. So see how he switches to, here's what the party believes. He doesn't want to answer this question because he does know what he believes. Donald Trump believes that homosexuality and transgendered mental illness should be celebrated. Donald Trump is a homosexualist. He has been for 2 decades. He's promoted and supported. We'll get to this. I'll show you people. All you hapless, moronic evangelicals who are supporting Trump, I'm going to embarrass you before the show is over. Kimmel went on, "Well, that's the party, but what about you, Donald? What about you?" And Donald said, "I say let the states decide." And all the Republicans said, "Yeah, let the states decide, by golly." And Donald Trump says, "Yeah, let's let the states decide, and they'll hopefully do the right thing." Now, he never gets on to saying exactly what the right thing is, because if there's one thing Donald Trump does not know, it's what the right thing is. Building the wall, that he knows the right thing in that situation. I'm all for building a wall on the southern border. But does that mean we have to elect a complete buffoon? Is that where we are? Because he's right on one topic, we're going to elect a man who will steer the country right into the age of the Caesars. I don't think I've said that on this show. On Bob and Yart Live a few weeks ago, last week maybe, I said that it was my opinion that the ascension of Donald Trump is an indication that America has departed from the age of the Republic, and the age of the Caesars is now upon us. Now, I think history will look back on that particular broadcast and realize that that was an historic statement. Extremely insightful and wise. And the age of the this age of the Caesars, by the way, if you go back to Rome, the Caesars who ran Rome, they came out of the world of the military, you see. But in America, it seems like it's going to be different. Our Caesars will come out of the world of entertainment, which is much more bloodthirsty and vicious and cruel. And so we're in for it. We're in for it even worse than the Romans had it, under the worst of the tyrannical, insane Caesars. Claudius has nothing on Hollywood. Nero? Ha ha! Forget Nero. I give you Tarantino. That's what we're going to get. All right. Now, so Kimmel followed up when Donald Trump said, hopefully the states will do the right thing. Kimmel followed up and asked, what is the right thing? And Trump answered, I don't know yet. He's going to be the president. And he's asked what mentally deranged people who don't know what sex they are, who want to go to any bathroom they want to go, he doesn't know what to do. So he has basically admitted he's an ignorant fool. And folks, I'm here to tell you, I have hung out at times in my life with some very rich people. Very rich. And I can tell you that just because a man has made a lot of money, it does not mean he's not an idiot, okay? You can get good at one little thing and you can make a fortune and still generally be a cultural moron, an idiot, an immoral fool. And that's what Donald Trump is. He's a guy who made a lot of money, but he's an idiot, okay? Not to put too fine a point on it. And I do not want this to be confused as an endorsement for Donald Trump. I am not endorsing Donald Trump today. I just want to be clear about that. All right. Now, world leaders, see, we've had Obama. We've had Carl Gallups. We've had Donald Trump. Now we go to Jason Trudeau. I'm not Jason, Justin. I'm sorry. I apologize. Justin Trudeau is the Prime Minister of Canada. And if I'm not mistaken, he's the bastard son of Margaret Trudeau, and he was conceived on one of her coke binges in the bathroom of a disco sometime in the 1970s. That's my opinion. I could be wrong on that. But she was in the discos on many, many coke binges right around the time that he was conceived. We'll leave it to our crack research staff to find out if that's true. But Mr. Trudeau came out last week endorsing a bill in the Canadian legislature that would legalize medically assisted suicide. He says that this legislation is balanced. It's the right thing to do. He says this legislation, says Justin Trudeau, would allow people with incurable illnesses or disabilities to end their lives. But our legislation deftly stop short of extending the right to minors and the mentally ill. Somebody should call up Justin and remind him that that's just what they did in Holland. They only started with the old people with serious diseases, and now they're killing teenage girls who are depressed. But Justin Trudeau, he thinks he's so smart. He says, well, we will not do it this way. We will only allow the old people who are very, very sick to have help with assisted suicide. This will not affect the mentally ill or the children in any way. He says, quote, there are people who think we should have gone further in this bill, and there are people who already think we have gone too far. Uh-huh. So, Mr. Trudeau, the people who think that you should have gone further, well, they should stop being hypocrites and kill themselves first. Okay, And then the people who think you've gone too far, those people in Canada who think you've already gone too far, Mr. Trudeau, they should indict, convict, and execute the legislators who wrote this bill. That's right. That's what I said. Endorsing suicide is as a government official, is a capital crime. You cannot be a governing official and endorse criminal behavior. That's treasonous, and you should be executed for it. And so there's how you should handle both groups. Let's see. He says, this is the first step, and it is responsible and prudent. And it gets the balance right between protecting and defending our rights and our freedoms. And I am confident that we got the balance right. Says Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, as he advances the cause of the suicide of Western civilization. It's something we've been watching here for decades. As the West, as we abandon Christianity and become unmoored from morality, godliness, and then eventually reality, our governing officials end up advocating that we all go mentally berserk, mutilate our bodies, use each other's bathrooms, and then eventually just kill ourselves. Bernie, thank you for joining us. Just in the break there, I read the headline, the Iraqis and the Peshmerga are on the verge of capturing Mosul in Iraq, on the verge. Now, if I'm not mistaken, they've been on the verge of capturing Mosul for approximately 4 months. So at some point, you can't say they're on the verge anymore. I would say after 2 weeks, you would have to assume that something happened to the verge. Okay? They lost the verge. That's all I'm saying. Folks, one well-equipped Marine brigade with naval and air support could take Mosul in a week. But, of course, to what end? Well, there's just no end to that. It's just so sad. As soon as we started blowing things up in Iraq, we should have started building Christian churches. We should have started supporting Christians within the community, and we should have installed Christians in the government. But we have not done so. So there's no sense in sending a well-equipped Marine brigade, because their victory would be squandered in pagan idolatry and foolishness at the highest levels of our government. And I'm not talking just about the Democrats. George W. Bush squandered an awful lot of blood in Iraq and in Afghanistan. Now, speaking of the end of the world, let's go to Venezuela, where if you're living in Venezuela right now, it sure is starting to feel like the end. A report from the New York Times tells us that step by step, Venezuela has been shutting down. It's a country that has long been accustomed to painful shortages, even of basic foods. But Venezuela keeps drifting further and further into uncharted territory. This is the New York Times. It says that the collapse of a nation is uncharted territory. The New York Times charted it at least a dozen times over the past century. It's not uncharted territory. You charted Germany in 1933 there at the New York Times. You know what I think is possible? Is that the young people who write for the Times and the urinalists all over the country, they actually don't know that all this has happened before. They just don't realize it. That's like this kid I was having dinner with, the millennial church group leader. I said, you have to go and read some history from before you were born. Read something from before 1990. Before you start throwing. Well, he was born after 1990. I said, you need to look back and find out what happens with socialists when they take over. Because it's painfully obvious to anyone who knows how to read. But this author for the New York Times, apparently he's forgotten. He hasn't read his own newspaper. He's probably some millennial child who's just a fool and an ignorant child. But he goes on. The government in Venezuela has shut down many of its offices for all but 2.5 days each week. So that's probably saving grace of the place. Shut the government down to halftime. That helps. But it's not helping much. Electricity and water are being rationed. The Mexican company that bottles Coca-Cola in Venezuela has run out of sugar. They have to stop making Coca-Cola. Protests have turned violent in parts of the country. With demonstrators, listen to this, they're marching in the streets demanding that empty supermarkets be resupplied. Folks, when a civilization comes to this where people are marching in the streets and setting fires and demanding that supermarkets be resupplied, you're over the edge, folks. That's it. You can't demand that supermarkets be resupplied. And you can't resupply supermarkets by force. And when you're so mad with whatever fear and hunger and apprehension as the people in Venezuela, well, they're just going to start slaughtering one another. And they're going to start killing the rich people, taking everything they have. And then the bar for who's rich and who gets killed and eaten, that bar just keeps getting lowered until even the beggars on the street corners are butchering one another. That's where Venezuela's headed. That's where America's headed if we elect a socialist. If we keep electing socialists, for crying out loud. Demanding that supermarkets be resupplied. Wow. The Times reports that the economic crisis is fueled by low prices for oil, which is the country's main export, coupled with a drought and a long decline in manufacturing and agricultural production. They tell us that the crisis has turned into quite the political problem for Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro and his Socialist Party. Here it is in the article. They finally mention the Socialist Party. Now, they talk about this long decline in manufacturing and agriculture per cultural production, but the Times reports that as if this has just happened in a vacuum, just by chance. For some reason, you know, the manufacturing and agriculture has just been on a slide. They don't mention that the socialists have been running the place for 25 years, and they've pretty much destroyed it. They've stolen everyone's money and then spent it, and now they've run out. And so now Maduro is actually ordering military exercises, citing threats from outside Venezuela. Everybody wants to come. I'm sure, Mr. Maduro, that all the surrounding nations can't wait to come in and take over a country where people are demanding that supermarkets be resupplied. Right? I'm sure they all just want to come in and take over that lovely paradise. So Maduro's getting the military ready because the bloodbath is coming. And this is not something that could not have been predicted or foreseen. It's obvious to anyone with a brain what's going to happen in Venezuela. Is there anything good in the Venezuelan situation? Venezuela's public schools are now closed on Fridays in an effort to save electricity. So they're brainwashing the children there one fewer day per week. Venezuelans report that they are now getting skin irritations, rashes, and diseases from not being able to shower, bathe, or wash their sheets and towels. Oh, let's invade. That sounds great. I'm sure Honduras just can't wait to get in there. Anyway. So the bloodbath is coming to Venezuela. Pray for the Christians down there. Pray that some Christians in Venezuela will stand up athwart history and stop the madness. Because here's the thing about economics and money and revolutions and mobs in the streets. It's purely psychological. And one rational man who stands up and tells the truth can stop it. And he can calm the nerves of a million people. If he'll just stand up and speak the truth and tell people we've all got to look at each other and we've all got to get through this together and we've got to help each other. And that's what Venezuela needs. All right. From Venezuela, we go across the pond over to Great Britain, the formerly Great Britain. This is from WorldNet Daily. They report that the British government has announced an investigation into Islamic law to examine its compatibility with the nation's laws. So that sentence, that surprised me. I was not aware, and perhaps I have a lot going on in my life. I work, I've got the kids, I've got the family, I've got the job, I've got the church. I've got something of a ministry, preaching the gospel. I don't catch all the details. I'm a big picture guy. I did not realize that Islamic law was being enforced in England right now. I was not aware of that. But the Home Secretary, Ms. Theresa, says that there shall be a review by a panel that, of course, includes several Islamic scholars. We intend, says the Home Secretary, to explore whether and to what extent the application of Sharia law may be incompatible with the law in England and Wales. We shall examine the ways in which Sharia may undermine shared values and cause social harms. So they have Islamic, they have, what do they call them here? Sharia councils. A number of British women have reportedly been victims of Sharia councils in England. Apparently these Sharia councils are sending down sentences and opinions that have some force within the community. I did not know they had Sharia councils in England. Maybe I'm ignorant, but I did not realize. And now to see that the response of the British government is to examine and debate and discuss and, of course, invite some Islamic scholars onto the council, it's unbelievable to me. It's shocking. It's just shocking. How is this England we're talking about? Well, apparently it is. Ironically, the review of Sharia in England comes 800 years after the signing of the Magna Carta. So they got about an 800-year run there in England before they sacrificed themselves to the pagan hordes of Islam. 800 years, it's a pretty good run. Could have went on a lot longer, but they lost their nerve. Uh-huh. Yes, the men of, you know, England and most of Europe was largely homosexualized 2 decades ago. And so they're lost. All is lost. They'll all be beheaded. If not in my lifetime, in my children's lifetime, Europe will be beheaded by the Muslim hordes. All right. Now, speaking of losing your nerve, listen to this. A Republican, Rick Allen of Georgia, was on Capitol Hill when he had the audacity to pull out a Bible and begin reading it in front of God and everyone, including legislators in the United States government. He began to read from the Bible as a way of showing fellow Republicans that they ought to be ashamed for backing Barry Obama's spending bill that upholds government contracts with special rights for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgendered, questioning, and others. He read the passage about the sin of homosexuality right from the Bible on the floor of the legislature. And what did his fellow Republicans do? They responded by walking out of the room in disgust. The Republicans were shocked that one of their own would stand up and read what God says about men and women and sex. The Republicans, in fact, here's a quote from one of the Republicans regarding a legislator reading from the Bible. Here's what one Republican said. It was effing ridiculous. That's what a Republican said about someone reading from the Bible. It was effing ridiculous. Well, they don't say who said it. This was reported by The Hill magazine. I got this from WorldNet Daily. They don't say who said it was effing ridiculous. Let's see. WorldNet Daily reports that it is not clear what specific passage was read that offended so many people. It wasn't clear since neither the legislators nor the reporters on the scene were familiar enough with the Bible to identify the scripture. Well, how would we know? Well, see, there's books, and then within the books, there's chapters, and then there's verses, see, and that's how we keep track. And the reporters are taking notes. Oh, there's books, chapters, and verses. Wow. Okay, next time, if he does that again, we'll be able to tell exactly what this is. Let's see here. The spending bill, this is shocking in and of itself. The spending bill has a specific section with language that relates to homosexuals and mentally ill transgendered people. Folks, our governing officials are writing laws that specifically cater to mentally deranged sex perverts, okay? Just let that sit for a second. So the LGBT portion of the spending bill was sponsored by Representative Patrick Maloney, who is a homosexual New York Democrat. Has received the backing of dozens of Republicans. I just don't want to go there. He's received the backing of dozens of Republicans, whatever that might mean. Back. Yeah, turn it up.
Ow!
Is there a guitar solo? All right, we've got to come back. Put the guitars away, boys. Eddie Van Halen on the bass before the facelift.
Wait, this is
that? But Eddie Van Halen played the bass on that record.
Really?
He did. Before the facelift. Yes, that was Sammy soloing on the guitar. So, interesting choice of bumpers, by the way. Double her pay. Right now, I'm asking executive management on the air, double this woman's pay. All right, now we go to the How Long, O Lord file. Oddly enough, just coming off the fact We just come off this story where the Republicans walked out on a Republican because he was reading the Bible, and it freaked them all out. I mean, they were shouting profanities in the hallways after hearing the Bible. And now we go to Israel from the How Long, O Lord file from the Jerusalem Post. The first ever Miss Trans Israel pageant has been held in Tel Aviv. It was held on Friday to mark the beginning of the 2016 Pride events in Tel Aviv. This is just the beginning of the Pride events in Tel Aviv. And it is the Miss Trans Israel pageant. The winner, are you sitting down? Okay? The winner was a Christian Arab from Nazareth. It was a trans woman, which I think, if I'm not mistaken, is a man who has transitioned to something appearing like a woman, if I'm not mistaken. I could have it backwards. This can get a little confusing. They did have a swimsuit competition and evening wear and formal wear. So I think this is boys dressing like girls, if I'm not mistaken. So a Christian Arab from Nazareth is a transgendered beauty pageant winner at the Miss Trans Israel pageant. Obviously, this is the first file in the How Long, O Lord file. And I'm certain that this file will get thicker unless the Lord decides, okay, I don't want Christian Arabs from Nazareth parading around dressing like girls, and that's it. I'm going to come back and straighten this whole thing out, which could happen at any moment, because this is pretty disgusting.